the journey to, I'm going to pop this down up here a minute. We're looking at the journey to the cross, the road to Calvary. And we're following Jesus' journey as he gets nearer and nearer to Jerusalem. And I'm reading today from Luke chapter 18 and verse 35. Later on, we'll go and read some verses just before it because it puts it in context. But I want to save that. Let's look at verse 35 and read from there. As Jesus approached Jericho, Jericho was on the road to Jerusalem. As Jesus approached Jericho, a blind man was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard the crowd going by, he asked what was happening. They told him, Jesus of Nazareth is passing by. And he called out, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Those who led the way rebuked him and told him to be quiet. But he shouted all the more, Son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus stopped and ordered the man to be brought to him. When he came near, Jesus asked him, what do you want me to do for you? Lord, I want to see, he replied. Jesus said to him, receive your sight. Your faith has healed you. Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus, praising God. When all the people saw it, they also praised God. What a great story. Journeys that we make in life, journeys that we take with others, whether it's a walk at the beach with somebody or a longer journey through perhaps the shared experience of marriage or partnership in business or friendship over many years. Those journeys in life always involve a process of discovery and experience, don't they? We learn something about ourselves as we make a journey, if only to find a way to where we're going, or how impatient we get in traffic, or whatever it is. We learn something about ourselves, but we also learn something about the companions that we are walking with, the people who accompany us on those journeys. And it's no different for the disciples. I think we're on the next slide, guys. It's no different for the disciples who have traveled with Jesus for the past 3 years. They're learning about themselves. They're learning about Jesus. They're learning things that they haven't previously known on this journey in this final stage of Jesus' journey as he heads towards Jerusalem. And as they come through Jericho en route to Jerusalem, they pass a seemingly inconsequential figure by the roadside. I'm sure the roadsides of Israel in that day were littered with, there wasn't a social service system, so the people in need had to beg by the roadside. That was the only way that they could get what they needed for life. And so I'm sure there was quite a collection of these folk as you traveled about, and it would seem to be a fairly inconsequential thing, a blind man sitting by the roadside and begging. And for this man, his situation is desperate and his position is one of great humility. He's there at the dirt in the side of the road. He needs what he's given today in order to live for this day. And he was not in a position to ever go and find Jesus. But Jesus, this day, walks by this guy. Jesus, this day, walks the road that he is sitting at. But that very act of Jesus passing by needed a response. I wonder in the course of 3 years, how many people did Jesus pass by? How many people didn't realize just what had happened, the opportunity that had been theirs, the extent of the power that had just moved by them, the enormity of the love that had passed by them, the wonder of the person that had passed by. I wonder how many people just let Jesus walk by. And you know, I don't think it's any different today. There's a lot of people don't realize. They don't realize just how close he is. They don't realize how near he is, how much he longs to do, how much he longs to enfold people in his love and to share his power and influence. The response that it needed was the cry of faith, right? This guy had to cry out. He had to cry out, and he does that. As soon as he learns who's passing, he senses that this is an opportunity that's just slipping away. If he doesn't take a hold of it this minute, it won't be there. And so he understands in this moment that this is not just another man, another passerby. This Jesus of Nazareth that everybody speaks about, this miracle worker from up north, he realizes in this split second, as he has to make a decision about what he's going to do, that in his mind, this man must be the promised Messiah, the son of David, the sent one from God, the anointed one, the appointed one, the king who was coming. And he acknowledges that in how he shouts for Jesus' attention, Jesus, son of David. He cries out in his need, and he won't be silenced by the crowd, the people that shush him. Stop making a scene. Be quiet. We don't like that, do we? We don't like scenes. And these guys are trying to get him to quieten down, but he just shouts out even more. That's what it says in verse 39. He won't be stopped. He must be heard. I don't know if we recognize our needs, if we realize who's walking by, if we will persist, if we do persist in seeking his attention. So the cry of faith, and then the response to the cry of faith is this incredible question. The question of faith. The crowd dismisses this man. He's a nothing. He's a nobody. He doesn't count for anything. But Jesus raises him up. Jesus, every act towards him is a raising of him up. Look at verse 40. Jesus stopped. This nobody warranted the attention of Jesus. And he ordered that the man be brought to him. For that, he had to be picked up. The crowd had to assist him. They had to enable him to get through to Jesus. And he's brought face to face with him. And then comes this incredible, this wonderful, this amazing question. What do you want me to do for you? Why does Jesus ask this question? Surely it is self-evident. It's obvious. Surely Jesus knows the answer. He knows everything anyway. Surely he knows what this man needs and his deepest longings and wants actually are. Surely even if he didn't have that kind of supernatural knowledge, he can see the problem with his own eyes. This man can't see. Surely it's clear. That's true. He can. But what do you want me to do for you is a question of faith. What do you believe I can do? What do you think I can do for you? After all, he's been asking the passers-by for their loose change, and will he settle for that? Or a bit of comfort? Or perhaps his wants and desires being looked after a little more straightforwardly in the coming days? No. No. Lord, says the man in verse 41. Lord, says the man, I want to see. I want to see. He makes a life-changing request. He voices his need and he expresses his faith as he does that. He says, I want to see. I believe that you, Lord, have the power to make me see. What do you want me to do for you? Lord, make me see. Make me see. I wonder what you would say to Jesus. Surely this is a question that can direct our prayers. What do you want me to do for you, says Jesus to me and to you? What do you want me to do for you? Well, how would you answer that question? How do you answer that question in your prayers as you come to the Lord? Express to him your answer, your response to him. Express in that answer your faith and confidence in his ability to make that change, just as this blind man did by the roadside. The question is important. The answer is too. And then there comes, following it hard on its heels, the gift of faith. Jesus says to him in verse 42, receive your sight. Your faith has healed you. It is by grace, through faith, the gift of God, reminding us of what we've been looking at in Romans, and particularly I'm shaped by that verse in Ephesians and chapter 2 and verses 8 and 9, which say exactly that. It is by grace you have been saved through faith, and it is not from yourselves. It is the gift of God. That man that day by the roadside was saved. He was saved from his life of begging. He was saved into something different. His life was changed. It was transformed by grace, by the grace of Jesus, through faith, by his actually claiming what he could see Jesus possibly do for him. The gift of God. And it's no different for us, friends. It's no different for us. By grace we receive, through faith, the gift of God. And I love the way what happens here, and Luke wants us to realize something of its intensity, because in verse 43, do you look at the word there? It says, immediately he received his sight. There's no gradual thing. Immediately he received his sight. There's three things that happen immediately. Immediately he receives sight. Immediately he gives back. Look what he says there. He received his sight immediately and followed Jesus, praising God. Immediately he gives back. Immediately this person from sitting by the roadside becomes a disciple of Jesus. And immediately he becomes someone who praises God. And someone who praises God enables others to praise God. Because immediately the crowd responds. Far from shushing him, now they join him in his praise, in his worship. It's a gift. And I wonder how we respond to seeing who Jesus really is, to sensing his power and the possibilities that are in him. Let's look back now at verse 31 to verse 34. Jesus, it says, just before this story, took the 12 aside and told them, "We're going up to Jerusalem, and everything that is written by the prophets about the Son of Man will be fulfilled. He will be handed over to the Gentiles. They will mock him, insult him, spit on him. They will flog him and kill him. On the third day, he will rise again." The disciples did not understand any of this. Its meaning was hidden from them, and they did not know what he was talking about. Jesus explains where this journey is leading and what he's going to do. There are six things that he is going to do for you, for me. What do you want me to do for you? These are six things that he's going to do. He will be mocked. He will be insulted. He will be spat on. He will be flogged. He will be killed. And he will rise again. Now, look at the way Luke, the master storyteller, presents this. So beautifully, because there are two types of seeing, physical and spiritual. The blind man can't see physically, but he sees very, very well spiritually. He understands who Jesus is. He understands the possibility of him. He has faith to see. The disciples see physically, but they can't see spiritually. They don't get it. The disciples, in a sense, are blind to the truth. They just don't see what Jesus is saying. They don't understand that Jesus is going to do all this for me and you and them, to prove that forgiveness is possible and death can be defeated, to bear our shame and to take it upon himself. Oh, there are two types of seeing, and we need to see in both these ways. Yes, that man sitting by the roadside, in order for his life to be changed and transformed, needed to physically see. But he could already see who Jesus was. And the disciples who are with Jesus and have been with him for so long, they need to see who Jesus really is. Their eyes of faith need to be alert and alive. So, where does this leave us? Where is this leading us on the journey of faith this Easter time? Friends, we need to understand that as Jesus leads us on this journey, as he led his disciples, he's leading us to recognize our need, to see the opportunity of our needs in him, who he is, to realize, like that man beside the roadside, that Jesus is the one who can make all the difference, to keep crying out, to keep longing for his attention. What are you asking Jesus to do for you? He says, "What do you want me to do for you? I have gone to the cross for you. I have risen to new life for you. What do you want me to do for you? What will transform your life? What will make life for you? What can I do for you?" And that becomes the basis of our prayers. How do we respond? Because the response of a disciple is to join, just like this man did, to join the journey of faith. Immediately, he received his sight and followed Jesus, praising God. And when all the people saw it, they also praised God. Let's join the journey of faith this Easter season. Thank you, Ross.